Welcome to What CEOs Talk About. Do you wonder what CEOs talk about behind closed doors? How they bring their vision to reality? How do they overcome and succeed through adversity? We share that and so much more with each episode. Now, let's get started with the show.
Hello, everybody. My name is Martin Hunter. I am the host of What CEOs Talk About, where we translate vision into frontline operations. Today on the show is Holly. Holly and I have been trying to connect for the past, we'll say, 6 or 7 months. Poor thing is she's building her business. She's doing a great job at it. We'll learn all about it. Holly, can you tell the listeners, who are you? Kind of short form.
Short form, I'm Holly Carinci, and I'm the CEO and founder of HWP PR.
Thank you very much, Holly.
With that short?
We will dive deeper. For those who are watching, look at the connection we got. Holly has got this beautiful polka dot. It almost looks like thumbprints or something from where I'm sending in. Yeah. And that's my boy's. Yeah, pretty neat. Different colors. What is the title of the show? What did we come up with?
We came up with reputation. Do you have one? And how to build one.
Da 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 da. Fabulous. Da, 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 da. All right. Before we start, we've got sponsors today. Like always, we have our book sponsor. These guys, I Need to Effin' Talk to You by Ken and Russell. These two guys have been able to put into play a super cool tool that talks about how to address difficult conversations in the workplace. And how they've done it is they've built scenarios. So they put scenarios together of, hey, this is Jimmy and this is John. Jimmy tells John to piss off. What does John do? And so we tend to think that most of our supervisors can deal with it. Even our leaders can deal with it. But without practice, practice is everything. And we do it in sport. We do it in other ways. Why not practice dealing with difficult conversations? And I just, being Scottish and from the East Coast of Canada, that four-letter word is kind of an article sometimes when I speak. So Ken and Russell, good job. I usually do service, but I'm going to keep that one. Product is Flow to Freedom with Apparel. Mrs. Kwong has this amazing product. For those listeners that know, I coach rugby and I have a teenage daughter that plays. And at this age is when we lose the most athlete, female athletes. And one of the reasons is the female period. And for guys, it is difficult for coaches like me, you know, talk about the period. I had one of the girls, she's like, hey, I don't want to practice today, or I'm not feeling well, coach. I'm really dizzy. And this is not my kid. This is a completely different kid who just shows up, walks to me. She's 15 years old. And she says, my period is pretty heavy. I'm feeling dizzy. And the entire coaching staff looked at me and I said, it's okay. Just walk it off, have some water, and whenever you want to come back in. And so the entire team, both of men and women, looked at me and gave me a golf clap. And they said, well done, Martin. well addressed. I was like, I did not know how to address that situation. But Flow to Freedom Apparel is all about using products and building products that support young women athletes and older women athletes as well, and how to deal with it as well. And she's got great talks and services around that. Anyways. That's the apparel, the product. The third one is a service, and that one is near and dear to my heart. It's UltraVest. It's how do we match corporations with underserved charities? What we do in UltraVest is we go to corporations and we say, hey, listen, you've got fine leaders who are looking to provide some assistance. They're looking to grow into a board role. Hey, we have underserved charities, because a lot of charities, the bigger charities, get all the money, and the underserved ones don't have the money to pay the talent that they need to bring on. And so what we're doing is we connect them by saying, hey, listen, empower your leader to grow his tactical and strategic leadership in a non-for-profit. And that benefits the organization as the individual grows, but it also profits the non-for-profit, profit-for-profit, non-for-profit. It enables the non-for-profit to be able to be better without having to draw on donors constantly. So we build efficiency and effectiveness within it. And for anybody who knows about my company, Urgio, it's all about operational excellence. So With that being said, thank you for our sponsors, Ken Russell for the book, Josephine Kwan from Flow to Freedom. And then, well, I'll give myself a thanks because I work with UltraVest as well. So, all right.
Good for you. Another golf clap.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Very well.
Yeah, that event with the young lady was pretty, you know, your father, you can expect it from your daughter. But when another kid shows up and says that to you, you kind of like, I was like, you know, my Adam's apple, like, gloop.
You know what I love, Martin? I love the fact that she felt comfortable enough to do that. Because those days, I was a runner. Could have really used, is it Josephine Kwan, did you
Kwan,
say?
Yes.
Was the woman's name?
Yeah.
Could have really used her advice when I was a runner because, yeah, that's what happens to you. But, of course, you didn't say anything about it. So this young lady, she caught you off guard. And you know what? Good for that. And pretty soon, people like you and I won't get caught off guard because it'll just be the norm, which is good.
Exactly, right? And it's it's the young lady. If we as coaches create a physical, mental, and emotional safe environment where the young athlete can see and work hard towards a contribution, if we create that safe environment where they can come to us, you know, a grown man who she doesn't know, and she can say, hey, listen, so thank you for that, because she did feel safe in mentioning that to us.
It's a huge compliment to you too. And it's a good sign of how society is going and how we're all growing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I have to admit, during the finals, we had some finals and there were a lot of tears coaching women and coaching young ladies. There was a lot of tears. I have to admit, you don't get that with the boys. You get that with the girls. And I appreciate every single tear is very moving. They were so committed.
It's very different. It is. Yeah.
Fabulous. All right.
Good.
All about Holly now. Holly.
All about me.
All about you. All about you. You have one of the cool stories, and that's why I wanted you to be on our show.
Thank you.
So tell us, where are you born? How were you raised? Kind of tell us, build up the story to where we are today.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to really skim past where I was born because all of that kind of stuff is kind of boring. But I was born in the prairies. I am a Canadian born and came here with a family, of course, when I was 8 on my 8th birthday and did the high school thing, went into modeling, acting. That was going along fine. And then I started landing auditions for lead roles for films, et cetera. And they were, of course, this is at the very beginning of the film and television industry here in Vancouver, which is quite big, as you well know, in BC now and in Toronto. But I was doing that and I was going in and I was getting these auditions and it was turning out that I wasn't getting any of them. They were all cast in LA. Almost every single one was cast in LA. And because there was a lot of anger in the casting room, it made me think, well, why are they doing this? Because it'd be so much better for them to cast a lead. Well, of course, they didn't know we existed. They didn't know we could act up here. You're coming in from LA. You're a producer. You're a director. All you know is Hollywood back in those days. You know, that's all you know. And that's all you – so this is your film. You are not going to trust it to somebody you don't know. So – I decided right then and there, pretty much, I just switched hats, as I've written many times, and I became a publicist. I needed one, and there weren't any, because the industry was just baby. The only publicists that there were called unit publicists, which handled the shows themselves, and that's not what I needed. I needed a personal publicist who would get my news out there. And so that, you know, directors and producers who, and casting directors in Los Angeles would know that I existed, but there were not any. So I decided, well, obviously I need to do that. So I switched hats and I became a personal publicist. I formed a company called Hollywords Publicity.
Okay.
And it did very well. I did that for about 26 years. And then during that time, I had a number of different types of clients, not just actors. I definitely took care of some, always individuals, by the way, always individuals, personal publicity, it's called. So directors, producers, and mostly actors. But I did have a dentist come to me I handled their neighbor, who was a huge voiceover actor. We were together forever. It was a wonderful thing. And the dentist wanted the same sort of publicity. I'm like, dude, there's nothing exciting about brushing your teeth. Seriously. Whereas what your neighbor does is, you know, pretty exciting. Anyway, I said I would think about it. And it ended up being a really great move, and it kind of led to where I am today, so bear with me. I ended up producing a show. It was at the time when the show Extreme Makeover was just its tipping point. And, you know, we were all shocked by what was going on. It was incredibly popular. And I decided to do something a little different, and that I was going to do an Extreme Makeover. I was going to hold a competition, which got us all the leads, of course, of people who wanted to have this work done. And he would take care of the cosmetic dentistry. And I brought in somebody who took care of the cosmetic surgery. And we did it as a live event, not the surgery, but the competition. Got up in front of a bunch of judges. It was at a big nightclub. It was great. So because of the enormous success of that, the video game industry in Canada came and said, listen, we're doing the work. I still get passionate about this. We're doing the work. And the video game award shows, there were two. Spike has the biggest one, I think. And I can't, E3 is the other one. Anyway, they're walking away with the hardware down south. So they're taking, you know, basically we're not getting any credit for all this great work we're doing up here. And I said, we need an award show, because I had done the, makeover. I was stupid enough to think that I could go ahead and do an award show. So we did. We started with one that was Canada only. And I was the first person in Canada, the first event to bring in William Shatner as our host. And it was a huge success. Yeah, huge success.
Does anybody not know? Hold on a second. If there's any listeners out there that doesn't know who William Shatner is, okay, he's Captain Kirk. And he's Canadian born.
Captain Kirk.
And we just want to own that, all right? We own, we proudly own our Canadians, Ryan Reynolds, Mr. Spock. Mr. Spock was Canadian as well.
Yes, I forgot about that. He was, wasn't he?
Yeah. I'm glad you did.
I don't like listening to my voice go on and on. The River Rock in Richmond was brand new. Oh, my goodness, it was beautiful. And we had a beautiful theater there. And so Bill came and did that show. And then our second show, we went international. And I had a lot of pushback from that, from the Canadians. No, no, this is supposed to be about us. And my thing was, are you saying you can't compete with the Americans? Are you saying they're better than you? And that's what I wanted to prove. I wanted to prove that they were.
Yeah.
And so that was a lot of fun. And you know who we got to come in? That was at the Vancouver Performance Center. I think it's a church now. Do you remember the Ford Center Performing Arts?
I'm beautiful. Not originally from here, so I don't know.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Beautiful theater. And Seth MacFarlane came. We had Seth MacFarlane, who's Mr. Family Guy. So he was
goodness.
Huge. Yeah. And then the last one we did, we had, not knowing, I don't think anybody knew, but we went right into the world recession, which was 2008, 2009. And so we barely pulled off at the Hotel Vancouver. We had Tom Kenny. And if you don't know who Tom Kenny is, but you have kids, I have to do something, okay? Because he taught us this at the at the ceremony. Okay. He's the guy that talks like this. SpongeBob SquarePants. He had my entire crowd of tuxedos and long gowns. Everybody was
going,
talking like this.
My
So there you go. So that kind of takes me up through there. And did you want me to go on and finish up
absolutely,
with Hollywood?
Absolutely. Okay. Take us all the way. It is vital for the people who are listening, because a lot of people, the story of your life is as important as the message, because it just defines the path.
And
a lot of people who are listening, you know, are in one way, shape, or form in their own path. And when you get to listen to other people's journeys, you get the opportunity to relate. You get the opportunity to define your own story and say, okay, well, Holly went through this, right? One of the things that I want to pull out from when you first mentioned, like you were started to be an actor, you know, the beautiful change that you do that a lot of people will call a pivot is that you went from a one-to-one relationship. So every movie you would apply, and you changed your business model to a one-to-many.
Yeah.
So now instead of going after individual situations, you went, okay, how do I serve upstream an entire group? And so that is critical. You know, when you think about it, you think of the relationships we have. Referral partners are as critical. Who you serve, how you help. Referral partners, it's like number four of things of growing your business. If you don't have referral partners, then you're working really, really hard for each transaction, right? So anyways, so please keep your story.
I like that point that you just brought up. That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way before, because instead of going out and championing, everything is about you, right? You're like championing yourself all the time when you're an actor or in that business at all. And then all of a sudden you put on a different hat and you're championing everybody else, which is interesting. And
you did it in a way that is really helpful and facilitating. Uh-huh. And that's what a lot of people struggle with. Is you said, okay, I was there. I couldn't get movies, right? And so let me tell my
story. This is why.
Yeah. And here's what I do now. I will help you. So when you offer that reciprocity of – now, of course, you're getting paid and there's nothing wrong in a business transaction. But basically what you're doing is here's – you know, this transformed who I am, and hopefully I can help you because here's the gap that I saw and here's how I can improve it. And so
– thank you.
Yeah,
I'm going to refer back to that on the second business.
No, I was going to say, now you do the same thing for CEOs. There you go.
Nice. That's exactly it. Bang on. Thank you, Martin. So we did the shows and then carried on through the industry. The climate changed in a very big way. And of course, you would know this as well. And that is that along came digital media. So all of a sudden, you didn't have your nice, you know, we had a lot of different relationships in Canada, and unfortunately, some of our, I mean, just amazing reporters were laid off and let go. And so myself as a publicist, we had less and less, and everything really changed, which was fine. Made that transition. I definitely focused on working in the United States a lot and did a lot of fun things. I met a lot of stars. I worked alongside a lot of them, did a lot of red carpets, you know, in LA, et cetera. And coming up to, we'll go into the transition from all of this, coming up to the pandemic, by the nature of what it is that I do, where I watch and scan headlines all the time, I started noticing that, to put it bluntly, the number of haters out there for CEOs was just, wasn't it? I mean, it still is, but it was a real thing then. Yeah. And here I am in a totally different world. But I had started to feel the need, I should add this, I had started to feel the need to do something with a little bit more meaning. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was watching my friends, you know, step out of their comfort zones. I had done it, as you pointed out, a long time ago. I hadn't done it since. This is what I've been doing forever and ever. But working and representing, as difficult as the work was, actors was not getting out there and definitely and doing anything of great meaning. Mm-hmm. And I just felt that I needed to give back to the world. Well, there was still time for me in my career before I retired. So I thought, I'm going to do anything different. I better do it right now. So went into the pandemic and saw it become more and more. And that's what they now refer to as the trust deficit. Mm-hmm. And just quickly, I'll give you a quick stat. Edelman, who is the biggest publicity firm in the world, and I'm a fan of theirs. They can't do what it is that my group's doing, so yeah, I can remain a fan. But they do something called the Trust Survey, Trust Barometer, every year. And in the United States, we weren't wrong in noticing this about the CEOs, because in the United States, CEOs were the third least trusted of all societal leaders. So Wow. I thought that that was bad. But what I couldn't believe is that in Canada, they're dead last. And you wouldn't know that, would you? You would not know that. And I feel that most of the CEOs who are the least trusted of all societal leaders, that's less than politicians, that's less than the media. I think that maybe they should sit up and take notice of that and make some changes. And so what I decided to do, bringing my story to a close, what I started to do when we went into the pandemic and all the film sets got shut down, mm-hmm. is I wrapped everybody up. And as I wrapped everybody up, I closed down contracts and let it go. And so 2 years later, and went into R&D mm-hmm. for PR for CEOs, and just launched on November 1st of this year, just a month ago, exactly.
Congratulations. That is why Holly was pushing me away. She's like, I need to get my website up. I need to get everything.
I have to get everything in line here.
The term CEO, it's mm-hmm. funny because on one side, everybody, it's loosely used, right? So you have young startups that go, I'm the CEO. Well, your version of the CEO is very different than what a corporation who makes more than $100 million, $50 million, right? You have how many lives in your back pocket? Oh, I have a virtual assistant in the Philippines. Okay, so you're the chief everything officer. And I use chief very loosely because chief means that you're in charge of people. Executive is mean that you're directing. And officers, your name's on a piece of paper that holds you liable to the outcome of the business and the integrity of the organization. So when you think of the title very, very carefully, you go chief. So you are responsible and accountable for everybody within the organization. So there's a lot of weight that goes with that. And that's why a lot of CEOs don't sleep. A lot of CEOs, as much as people think that they're not human beings, most of them work overworked, because I know I was one. We think of Billy, Bobby, Susie, the kids of the people that work within our businesses. When we have to make tough decisions, we know that people will make it will impact people. So the executive comes from there, right? Every decision that you make has a ripple effect, not just with your consumers, but with your partners, with your employees, with their partners, with their family. And lastly, officer, is that you are liable for the output and the conduct of an organization. Mm-hmm. So you can hate Hefty all you want.
Duty.
You can hate all you want.
Yeah.
Pardon my French. There's a lot of fucking pressure that goes with being a CEO. So, I mean, a corporate CEO, let's not put CEO of a small startup. And again, I'm not bashing them. It's just our definition is very
it's not different. The same thing. Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. Well said, Martin, because I have, when I say we launched on November 1st, that means that we opened up the doors and I called you and I called some other people and said, okay, I'm ready to start. I'm ready to come out and start talking about my business. It wasn't like, okay, we're going right into business.
No.
It's to actually start training people and so that they understand what it is all about. And you just did a really good job with that, because a couple of people who have spoken to me, I've just very gently said, this is not the service for you, for the reasons that you just said. This is the service of for, you know, anything from a really well-funded startup to a Fortune 1000. But mostly it is, what you were just saying, is CEOs that have a ton of responsibility. The game has changed. And that is what I am mostly talking about, is that so many of them are just, you know, forget the trust issues, forget DEI, forget crisis, you know, forget. No, you can't forget all of that stuff, because now society is starting to demand that they see you doing it. And that's one of the reasons why I built the company, was to service those things.
Absolutely. I mean, you're still using your gift, your capabilities, you're using your skills, knowledge, and experience. You're just targeting a different audience, a different client. There's nothing wrong with that. I always said a coach is a coach, regardless of, you know, I played rugby all my life. My daughter started being interested in field hockey when she was 4 years old. I went and coached. Now, I don't need to know the ins and outs of field hockey immediately. At a certain point, you will, but you will gain that experience. You will gain that knowledge as you follow through. But I want to come back to the title. So the first one is reputation. Yes. That is key. Like that trust, that reputation. When you do risk management in an organization, we use the acronym PAIR. So people, environment, assets, and reputation in that order. Okay. So you do a risk matrix and you say, what event can have an impact? And you talk about small events that have huge impacts are always reputational. Always, always reputational. When I was working with Shell, there was a Canadian goose on a processing facility that was dead. Somebody snapped a picture of that Canadian goose and said, Shell is killing Canadian geese. Like that. And it's like, how can you control, you know, a flying goose that lands on your property, probably swallowed, probably old, probably something that has nothing to do with consuming, you know, contaminated grass. It's not going to die there. Anyways, so that I want to put that in context when we're talking about how important and the connection between the human being who is the CEO and the master and commander, I use a naval term, of the ship called a business. That reputation, back in the day in the 1700s, people would flock to captains who had good reputations.
Yes. We've lost that. It's gone so much to the bottom line. Shareholders are much to blame. You have wonderful CEOs who can't make any changes to their companies because their shareholders won't let them. And then that comes down to, as far as I'm concerned, is that's the CEO's choice then for who they're working for. Because again, times through the pandemic, which makes it all brand new, it has changed. It is here to stay. It is not something that you can ignore. The people are making demands. They want to make sure that you are helping the climate. They want to make sure that that you're on their side when there's a very controversial public policy being forced upon you, such as the abortion rights of women in the United States. You know, you better know what you're doing and you better step forward and say something, because if they're demanding it, you can't ignore these things. And at the same time, how can you possibly be an expert in all of these areas? No. You cannot. They are brand new. Other than crisis, they are brand new. And you need experts, which is why we brought these people together. There's experts in every single area, as well as publicists who take the information of the work that the CEO is doing with the experts and gets it out in the media. So it's all a very nice win-win. But no, they can't do that by themselves.
And it covers the second component of the title. So reputation, you know, yes. Yeah. Number two is, do you have one? And I think we kind of covered that, because it's, you know, most CEOs that I know, like you said, they're under the veil of the organization because the stakeholders, not stakeholders, shareholders, very different.
Shareholders, very different.
Yes, the board, the people who hold the financial kind of stick, say, hey, listen, this is how it is. And it really shows, because in corporations, not in small to medium enterprise, small to medium enterprise, you have men and women who have in tenure as a CEO. And they're more like presidents than CEOs, but there's a long tenure. And it's unfortunate that we don't see that same cultural consistency that an organization needs by its leadership. And we tend, you know, the CEOs tend to shift every 24 to 36 months. And, we want fresh blood. We want fresh blood. We want fresh blood. Well, what about consistency? What about ensuring that, you know, your leader, how, you know, I'll take me, for example. I'm very energetic, right? And my energy flows up and down. There's days where I show up at the office and without even saying anything, everybody goes, you okay? Yeah. Why? Oh, your energy's down. Oh, is it? I'm sorry. We had rugby went late last night, went with the guys and we had a few beers and, you know, waking up at 4 with a few beers, going to bed at, 10 or 11 was not the best thing that I did. Oh, great. But they know that, right? And so then the entire organization knows that from that moment on, okay, well, maybe Martin won't be fully attentive in the meeting. Maybe he'll drink a little bit extra water that day, right? Or same thing. People know how caring I am. And I think that being able to say, my boy, my daughter, I say my boy because for some reason, all the women have boys in our, yeah, there's only two girls when I think about all the kids we have. Sorry, I just kind of, it dawned on me.
Why do I say my boy?
Exactly.
That's
so there's
perfectly acceptable. Yes, I have a boy too. So yeah.
So we have a lot more boys than that, I think about it. Anyway, so, my boy is sick, and I always say, I go in Slack. I say, rest well. We're not doing brain surgery. Nobody's going to die if you don't show up. I'd much rather you take the day off, spend time, take care of the. And people know that I live the second core value is demonstrate care. So exactly. without consistency, how the hell are you supposed to make sure a company grows, evolves, and is profitable? Sorry, I just went on a tangent there.
No, you didn't. Everything you said was, that's our point. People didn't have to know the CEOs before. The reputation came on the corporation that was built. I didn't change it. You didn't change it, but the world did change it. And COVID played a big role in that. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that I find, it's not maddening. It's just a tiny bit frustrating because I have a lot of respect. If CEOs, if you're running a big corporation, usually you're a pretty smart person. Well, if you're a pretty smart person, then you should understand, holy heck, there's something I've got to do about this. I've got to get out of the boardroom. And I've got to be much more forward facing. And, I don't know how to do that. No kidding. You don't know how to do that. I would be hard put how to do that. There's a lot of things that we're handling none of them. Absolutely none of them. I'm overseeing everything. And that is because there is the people we're bringing in. That is the only area they work in. So they are absolute experts in that area. Which, when you do that, while you pay more per hour for them, you spend way less hours with them. And what is one of the things that CEOs don't have any of? And that is time.
Time.
So, I think it's, that it's really important and to put that work in and make sure that you're somebody that your customers know, any of your shareholders, whoever your shareholders are, your stakeholders are, they need to know who you are. They need to know that they can trust you. And the only way they can do that is by taking a look at the good things that you're doing. Man, you better be doing good things. You're toast.
There's two things that I want to mention. One is the acronym DEAL: Direction, Elimination, Automation for Liberation. When you've got good direction, you eliminate anything and everything that's not aligned. You automate as much as you can. And that goes, especially in leadership, automation means delegation and process of delegation to liberate the time to be able to make more decisions. So you're building an efficient process to make effective decisions.
Definitely.
The second thing is, this is I love this one and it fits so perfectly. We come in, we're hired, we bought a company. And I go in and I meet everybody all the time. And so we go in and I meet the general manager who's been there for a long time. And I sit down and, hey, how you doing? Just kind of shooting the shit. And he says, with all due respect, sir, I don't know what you're going to come here and tell me how to do. He says, I have 29 years of experience in this and you don't. I said, okay, fair enough. How about we go see the crew? And I want you to leave a message with them. What are the most important messages? One was like something safety, and the other one was the upcoming barbecue. And so he says, all right, I got two things to tell you. We got the up and coming barbecue. You guys need to do this and bring your families. It's great. And just this safety issue. And then he goes on and says, what other questions do you have? So he keeps talking. He talks for about 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And so I said, thank you very much, Mr. X. Can you please leave for a second? So there was 10 people in the room and I brought 20 sticky notes. And I said, please write down what Mr. X said that you should remember. And I said, so I brought it back and I said, hey, Mr. X, how did you score? And in a very, very vain way, he says, well, I'm going to give myself 90 because I don't want to give myself 100. I don't want to look too vain. So I said, how do you feel about with 40%? He said, what? So he showed it. And I said, no matter what you think your reputation is, how you're dealing with the stuff, it's just a process, right? And let's create a process. And so we went in the next one and we changed the process where we left the last two things, the most important things, in there. And so he scored 100. And lo and behold, the reputation that I built with him and the crews by being out there, by not being in my office and saying, hey, nice to meet you, Mr.
Making
X.
a phone call to them. Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah. Right? And yeah. I was in Good Texas. There was another company. I was in Texas. And it's funny because my CEO said, oh, Martin's going to need about a $500 budget for tacos, his taco budget. And they're like, what? What's the taco? $500 for tacos? He's like, yeah, Martin, every time that he shows up with a place, we usually deal with trades and manufacturing companies. And so I show up and I walk in at 7 o'clock with about $100 worth of breakfast tacos for everybody every morning, not just one time, one day, 2 day, 3 day. On the fourth day, I always get, hey, boss man, like, I got something to tell you. I find out so much information from creating a reputation of being a taco
there
guy.
There you go.
And so, hence, regardless, I want to really support what Holly is saying of how critical it is as a CEO to have a reputation. And that reputation can be internal, external. Like for some people, it should be both. Yeah, it should be both. But it should not be one or the other, right? Nope. It's who you are as an individual, right? I bring my energy. I bring my care. But I am also like I want people to get shit done. So, you know, you get till 7:30. When 7:30 hits, tacos go away. Let's have our safety talk. Let's talk and do a toolbar talk. And so anyways, I just wanted to support and give a concrete example of how critical it is to have a reputation.
It is. Yeah, it is. Even when back, not knowing it at the time, of course, but even back when I was doing the award shows, and like you were saying, people are depending on you and, you know, permits haven't been paid for yet because the process is happening and all of a sudden your stage managers can't get through the door. And you know what? You can do all of that on the phone, but same as you, jump in the car and get down there. And everybody was calm then. And we got the door open and we go and we do the stage. Everything's fine, you know. But it's just those even that little example, it's very, very true. So, yeah, it's very necessary in today's world.
All right. Let's get right into the nitty gritty of translating that vision and the tools. Holly, master of reputation builder. How do we do it? How do you take I'll give you a hard case, right? Mm-hmm. You've got somebody who went through the ranks financially, who's a bean counter. Oh, sorry, that's very derogatory. Wade, you're listening.
It is, isn't it?
Wade works for me. He's our CFO. I'm sorry. I love you to bits, man.
So gotta be nice to the CFO.
Yeah. And all of our accounting team. Oh, no. Now they're going to go, oh, really? I owe you guys tacos too. So let's take somebody who comes, who's a hard numbered person. Let's take a man too. Let's take a man. He's hardwired, grew up he was the middle kid. So he's not the oldest, not the youngest, kind of invisible, hardworking individual, married, two kids. And who says, why do I need one? And he's a CEO. He was picked by the board and say, you're going to lead this $500 million company. How do you do it?
What do we do with him?
Yeah.
Actually, that will be our typical client. Exactly the way you described it. I just happen to know what to do with them. So here's a funny aside. I'm going to start with this. It'll be a little long. I will say, as I am right now, but for different reasons, I will say and pass on many opportunities, quite honestly. This company has been formed. It can service most people, such as the mm-hmm. situation you just described. There are people who don't want to get out there and help. There are people who don't want to contribute to climate change or transition, mm-hmm. rather. There are people who don't want to have a crisis prevention plan in mm-hmm. order. And all I think about is all the employees. What about your employee relationships? Mm-hmm. What about your customer churn? Those are your customers. Mm-hmm. These are the ways that we build a reputation, is by mm-hmm. helping you come to decisions, not your company. Your company can hire my experts companies mm-hmm. if they want. I'm only looking at the CEO. So so some of them that don't want to play any of that, that don't want anything to do with that, I am going to pass on.
Yeah,
I am
of course.
Going to say no, thank you. The people that come to us that have news coming up, we're still going to start. I don't care if they have news or not, because we can start at the bottom level. Having news is a nice thing that we will get to with your bean counter. Did I say that right? Yes, bean counter.
Yeah. <It's not good. laughs>
first thing that happens is that we do an audit and take a look and see how they are in all of the situations. And again, I keep kind of blasting them off. There's about mm-hmm. five of them. And that I've recognized that are some of their core issues that are very new to them and that they don't know how to handle. Mm-hmm. And by handling them, because your customers, because your stakeholders are demanding this of you, it's going to affect your bottom line if you're not doing it. So hence the mm-hmm. bean counter is mm-hmm. all you have to do is show them the statistics on that, which we've done all the research. And it's one of the reasons it took me a while to be able to talk to you, is mm-hmm. that's what we were in the middle of doing, is finding the research on that. So we can prove, we can show very high-end stats and surveys, et cetera, that shows how becoming more involved with your employees, how mm-hmm. Actually saying something or sending out messages to your customers, how that will relieve customer churn. And what we do is we end up building a relationship for you, building a reputation, for you, given that you are addressing all of these issues that are being mm-hmm. demanded this day. So if you are behind the scenes bean counter, you need us more. I got to stop saying that. CFO, you need us more than anybody, actually, I think. You know, people who are extroverts such as yourself and me, we don't even actually need it that much. We need direction. We need to know our facts, and we're there for all of that. But we're easier to package up and get out there. The people who really need these services are the people who understand that they need to step out, that they need to be the face of the company, that the mm-hmm. company itself can no longer be the face. They have to be. And that terrifies them. And that is okay. That's why mm-hmm. we have experts in every area. So you're going to be taken through the crisis prevention, the and talent acquisition, et cetera, all of their core issues. Be trained by an expert in each area, but you're also going to be taught how to message that. One of our best messaging experts that our clients will work with is the former VP of communications for Disney. That will just give you an example. Well, one of our biggest publicists is a business publicist. She was the head publicist for PwC out of the New York office for 11 and a half years. So that's the quality we have.
You have a survivor there. You have somebody who can survive.
I've had some.
Thank goodness.
You. Yes,
that is a survivor.
It is.
And I mean that in the nicest way possible.
Yes.
You are living in day-to-day trench warfare.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's a solid individual.
And, you know, yes, all of them. And they're lovely and they're wonderful. And they don't even need to prove their talent simply because of their credits. And I definitely, that again, the 2 years, people say, well, what did you do for R&D for 2 years? Do you know how hard it is to find these people? And I know.
Not just find, attract, recruit,
Yeah, exactly. And they all do, you know, and I was going up against the subcontractor type thing. Oh, well, you've just got subcontractors. And I was going against that. And I was like, no, that's the only way I will work it. They need to be successfully running their own companies. They need to be experts, hands-on in it right now. Then they can come and talk to my CEOs. So
I hate, and I use the word hate, the contract does not define the output. No. Employee or contractor, what do you give a shit? Are you getting the service that you've asked for, that you've paid for? Yes. And the story, how I, my relationship as an organization with the people that work within it, regardless if they're contractors or not, they're using my brand. And if I choose to have contractors, now there's, sorry, there are laws that you need to abide by. I don't get me wrong. I'm a law-abiding CEO, but there's how I deal with my contracts is none of your business. That's my opinion.
And if I may add something there, and I too have to be careful how I say this, but anybody, like for instance, nobody is in my network on my team who is with an agency.
Oh, nobody. That's beautiful.
And I think that, again, I've already mentioned one agency. They're the biggest in the world. And yes, they're great. They're great. And I admire them. The reason I said right flat out as firmly as I did, they can't do what we do is because they could not afford to keep these experts on staff. There is no chance they could. Mm-hmm. And even my clients who will pay higher hourly wage fees for these people. But again, you know, so you're paying twice as much, but it's going to take you 2 hours instead of four. What would you rather do? You know, and the level that you're getting from these people is just boom. And that's what my CEOs deserve, is what I'm concerned, I believe.
You're a boutique shop. We're a boutique shop. We don't have a gajillion people. We have the right people, right? It has to be organic. We've made a choice at Urgio to not exceed the number 27. 27, if we go above 27, is we lose that boutique feeling. You don't know everybody. You don't know all the kids. You don't know all of that. And then all of a sudden you become now a corporation. And I'm not saying corporation is the wrong thing. That's not what.
Neither am I, but it's not right for us. We're providing services. Yeah.
I'm leaving for Mexico and coming back 19 days later. My COO is going to Mexico, coming back for later. My VP of operations, she went out east and she worked the entire summer from out east doing half days. We still want that. And boutique offers flexibility for both the client, the leadership, and the team members. That is critical. I think we're in a place now where people want to live well.
And
well doesn't mean like you're a gajillionaire. It's just you want to appreciate life. You want it actually to be able means, to.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, yes, it actually means sometimes the opposite. People found that they got to spend time with their kids. How many times have you heard that about during the pandemic? It was like, I am not willing to go back to that extremely part-time, hardly ever seen parent again. I just want to see my kids. That's just going for the park. That doesn't mean you have to be a gajillionaire. So I really agree. Because I've always been a boutique publicist, boutique firm, but I've dealt on such a high level, I have a different perspective of it, but I understand how other people saw it. And that kind of bothered me. It was like, no, we're doing good work. But at the very same time, I am telling you that, and I will name them, Edelman, number one PR company in the world, cannot deliver the high level of service that we'll be able to deliver because of what you said too. And that's flexibility. Every single client needs something different. We have an answer for every single client and they're all pretty much C-level themselves. So
And it again, we're talking about not transactional, but transformational. Transactional is you pay for something, right?
Yeah.
So these people are investing in building their reputation. It's an investment. And therefore, there's a return on your investment. Okay. So when a car is a car, I get it. You know, you buy a Toyota Corolla and it's a good car, it'll get you from there to there. Right. Now, is your investment good? Yeah.
If you buy it, hasn't been recalled.
Exactly. Right? When I was thinking it's okay. When I bought a truck, I bought an F-150. My buddy's like, oh, F-150. I said, look at the resale value of this. Yeah, I'm going to pay a little bit more than what you do. But when it comes time to selling it, I'm going to get everything out of that. So it's no different when you're hiring a service. Don't pay more just to pay more, but really look at what you're going to get. And the reason why we are boutique firms is that because we are nimble. We are flexible. We adjust. Our systems are not rigid. You're not a consumer. You're a client, which is very different.
Big difference.
Right? Consumer, you get what you get. You don't get upset. A client is like, welcome. Can I get you an espresso? Would you prefer coffee? And there's all those things that you go, okay, great. You know what? And you know what? When Holly comes, don't offer her coffee. She prefers tea and she takes her tea this way. You can't afford that time when you're a corporation, when you're a boutique firm. You could treat people in a way that you want to be treated. And the client's not always right. But at least you get treated with dignity and respect like a human being, not just a consumer.
I agree. Yeah. And I think that certain services that are being delivered by companies such as ours, it's the services are personal. And so therefore, it's far better if you stay small, if you stay tight, because you need to know your client. You need to know what everybody is doing who is working with that client. You truly do get lost in the bigger corporations if they're providing the services. It just doesn't work.
And I've gone through this. Once you crack the nut, there's emotions that come up. And you have to be personable. You have to be able to grab and say, hold on a second, let me get the tissue box. All right? And you have to have that empathy. And that empathy comes from... So if you want your team members to be empathetic, then you need to create an environment as an organization to let that empathy flow when people are dealing. So that's I told you, it comes full circle. That's the reputation of the organization.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
See, I told you, it always comes full circle.
It did. It really did. Yes. Oh my goodness. I need to hire you guys on to go and talk to my clients to be and help me educate them, because you just did it right there perfectly.
Holly, how do we get a hold of you?
Oh, probably the best way, you can always look me up on LinkedIn, of course, which is whatever, LinkedIn/Holly Carinci. But you know what, really good? We just rebuilt the website.
Right.
And that is www.hwp-pr.com.
It's a nice.
Thank you.
What is your favorite book, favorite reference, favorite movie? What is it that you refer back to as a leader, as a CEO yourself, as the owner and founder of your business? What's the one book, one movie that you go, I fall back to?
Well, you know what? You're going to hate me for this, because it's very interesting. I am one of the only people I know that doesn't read nonfiction.
It could be fiction. What's your favorite book? What is your favorite book? What is the book or the movie that you go back to that you've watched or reread a few times?
I don't think that I have a book that I've reread a few times, but I can tell you that one of my favorite books, and I'm blanking on the author, is All the Lights We Cannot See. Ooh. I believe it won the Pulitzer recently. It's not that old, and it is wonderful. So I'm sorry, but yeah,
it's okay. You know, don't apologize. You're more than welcome to.
I scan where I get my facts from is I scan, of course, headlines all morning, mm-hmm. and it's a couple of hours of work every single day. So I think that's probably why when I snuggle down into bed at night and I'm going to read a book, it's like, take me somewhere else, take me out of this world, right? And I'm pretty sure that's why I do that. But yeah, New York Times, Bloomberg, Reuters, the Washington Post, those are the Economist. They all come in the morning and I scan absolutely everything. So I do read facts.
Yeah. There's a couple of movies, Master and Commander, when I think of leadership, but when I come times about reputation and who a person is, The Last of the Mohicans is one of my favorite movies. It demonstrates love, people, you know, I this is good. But you know, without having huge sexual scenes or anything like that, how the back in the days in the 1700s, love was just at a first sight. And when there's the two people kill themselves or the lady jumps off the cliff because the person she loved at first sight died, is this like, you're like, holy Moses, those were some solid values back then. Solid values, right?
That's what we're trying to get back to a little bit. Maybe don't go jumping off a cliff. But yes, I could not agree with you more. Those are great, great movies.
All right. Thank you for our sponsors. We have I Need to Talk to You by Ken Russell. We've got Floated Freedom, Josephine Quang, and we've got Ultravest today. It's my special one. So thank you for making this podcast happen. Truly appreciate it. And Holly, thank you so very much for being on the show. Finally made it happen.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much for having me on. It was just a blast.
Today was... yeah, absolutely. Thank you. All right. So I'm the host of What CEOs Talk About, where we today translated reputation into how do you deal with it on a day-to-day basis. So thank you very much, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks for tuning in to What CEOs Talk About. Make sure to click subscribe to get notified about future episodes or check us out at www.whatceostalkabout.com.